Morning and welcome. Sunshine, no rain, no wind, probably tempting fate, but it's really good to see you all here, see familiar faces in this garden. So thank you so much for coming along this morning. When I stood on the steps of Downing Street just over there 2 months ago, I promised that this government would serve people like you. Apprentices, teachers, nurses, small business owners, firefighters, those serving our community and our country every day. I promised that we would get a grip on the problems that we face and that we would be judged by our actions, not by our words. I said before the election, and I say it again really clearly today, growth, and frankly, by that, I do mean wealth creation, is the number one priority of this Labour government. And that's why, in our first few weeks, we've set up the National Wealth Fund, because we want every person and every community to benefit. It's why we've unlocked planning decisions, because we're going to build 1.5 million new homes. It's why we set up Great British Energy, to create good jobs and cut people's bills. And it's why we ended the national strikes that have crippled our country for years. Because I defy anyone to tell me that you can grow the economy when people can't get to work because the transport system is broken, or can't return to work because they're stuck on an NHS waiting list. We've done more in 7 weeks than the last government did in 7 years. And these are just the first steps towards the change that people voted for, the change that I'm determined to deliver. But before the election, I also gave a warning. I said change would not happen overnight. When there's a deep rot at the heart of a structure, you can't just cover it up. You can't just tinker or rely on quick fixes. You have to overhaul the entire thing. Tackle it at root, even if it's harder work and takes more time. Because otherwise, what happens? The rot returns in all the same places, and it spreads worse than before. You know that. I know that. And that's why this project has always been about fixing the foundations of our country. But I have to be honest with you. Things are worse than we ever imagined. In the first few weeks, we discovered a £22 billion black hole in the public finances. And before anyone says, oh, this is just performative or playing politics, let's remember the OBR did not know about it. They wrote a letter setting that out. And they didn't know because the last government hid it. And even last Wednesday, we found out that thanks to the last government's recklessness, we borrowed almost £5 billion more than the OBR expected in the last 3 months alone. That's not performative, that's fact. But as well as the things that we've discovered, we've also seen shocking scenes across the nation. A mindless minority of thugs who thought that they could get away with causing chaos, smashing up communities and terrifying minorities, vandalising and destroying people's property, even trying to set fire to a building with human beings inside it. And as if that wasn't despicable enough, people displaying swastika tattoos, shouting racist slurs on our streets, Nazi salutes at the cenotaph. The cenotaph, the very place we honour those who gave their lives for this country, desecrating their memory under the pretense, and it is a pretense, of legitimate protest. Now they're learning that crime has consequences. that I won't tolerate a breakdown in law and order under any circumstances. And I will not listen to those who exploit grieving families and disrespect local communities. But these riots didn't happen in a vacuum. They exposed the state of our country, revealed a deeply unhealthy society, the cracks in our foundations laid bare, weakened by a decade of division and decline, infected by a spiral of populism which fed off cycles of failure of the last government. Every time they faced a difficult problem, they failed to be honest. They offered the snake oil of populism, which led to more failure, round and round and round, stuck in the rut of the politics of performance. Now, I saw the beginning of that downward spiral firsthand back in 2011, when riots ripped through London and across the country. I was then Director of Public Prosecutions. And when I think back to that time, I see just how far we have fallen. Because responding to those riots was hard. Of course it was. But dealing with the riots this summer was much harder. Back in 2011, I didn't doubt that the courts could do what they needed to do. This time, to be honest with you, I genuinely didn't know. Let me tell you this, every day of that disorder, literally every day, we had to check the precise number of prison places and where those places were to make sure that we could arrest, charge and prosecute people quickly. Not having enough prison places is about as fundamental a failure as you can get. And those people throwing rocks, torching cars, making threats, they didn't just know the system was broken. They were betting on it, gaming it. They thought, they'll never arrest me. And if they do, I won't be prosecuted. And if I am, I won't get much of a sentence. They saw the cracks in our society after 14 years of failure. And they exploited them. That's what we've inherited. Not just an economic black hole, a societal black hole. And that's why we have to take action and do things differently. And part of that is being honest with people about the choices that we face, how tough this will be. And frankly, things will get worse before they get better. I didn't want to release prisoners early. I was chief prosecutor for 5 years. It goes against the grain of everything I've ever done. But to be blunt, if we hadn't taken that difficult decision immediately, we wouldn't have been able to respond to the riots as we did. And if we don't take tough action across the board, we won't be able to fix the foundations of the country as we need. I didn't want to means test the winter fuel payment, but it was a choice that we had to make, a choice to protect the most vulnerable pensioners while doing what is necessary to repair the public finances. Because pensioners also rely on a functioning NHS, good public transport, strong national infrastructure. They want their children to be able to buy homes. They want their grandchildren to get a good education. So we have made that difficult decision to mend the public finances so everyone benefits in the long term, including pensioners. Now that is a difficult trade-off, and there will be more to come. I won't shy away from making unpopular decisions now if it's the right thing for the country in the long term. That's what a government of service means. This shouldn't be a country where people fear walking down their street. their TVs showing cars and buildings being set on fire. This shouldn't be a country where the Prime Minister can't guarantee prison places. This shouldn't be a country where people are paying thousands more on their mortgages or waiting months for hospital appointments they desperately need, where our waters are filled with sewage, where parents worry that their kids won't get the opportunities that they did, where nothing seems to work anymore. So when I talk about the inheritance the last government left us, the £22 billion black hole in our finances, that isn't about a line on a graph. That's about people's lives, your lives. And the Tories are still not being honest. They know their recklessness cost them the election, but they won't accept the cost that they've inflicted on the country. And they won't apologise for what they've cost you. They're just still thinking about themselves. Now, this government won't always be perfect. But I promise you this, you will be at the heart of it, in the forefront of our minds, at the centre of everything that we do. And that's why I wanted to invite you here today, to show that decent, hard-working people who make up the backbone of this country belong here. This is a government for you. A garden and a building that were once used for lockdown parties. Remember the pictures just over there of the wine and the food? Well, this garden and this building are now back in your service. It's not just that the last government relied on easy gimmicks and bad ideas. Those things happened precisely because the government itself lost its focus on the hopes and ambitions of working people. During those recent riots, I made huge asks of the police and of the criminal justice system. People already stretched to the limit. They knew I was making big asks of them, and I'm not going to apologise for it. But let me tell you this, they delivered. They deserve our gratitude. And that's why I went to Southport, to Lambeth, to Belfast, to thank them personally, to shake the hands of the first responders who rose up to the ask I was making of them. They deserve a government that trusts them, supports them, and works with them. That is the sort of government that we will be. One that works with people, not does things to them. One that believes in hard graft, not gimmicks. Honest about the challenges we face and working tirelessly to fix them. And that is how we will always work. Now, next week, Parliament returns. The business of politics will resume. But it won't be business as usual, because we can't go on like this anymore. Things will have to be done differently. We will do the hard work to root out 14 years of rot, reverse a decade of decline, and fix the foundations. Between now and Christmas, we will carry on as we've started, action, not words. We will introduce legislation and take decisions to protect taxpayers' money, to take on the blockers by accelerating planning to build homes and boost growth. We will forward this autumn to harness the full potential of AI for growth and for the public good. We'll bring rail service into public ownership, putting passengers first, the biggest levelling up of workers' rights in a generation, to give people security, dignity and respect at work. And Great British Energy will be owned by the taxpayer, making money for the taxpayer, producing clean energy and creating good jobs. That is our focus for the rest of the year. But I will be honest with you, there is a budget coming in October, and it's going to be painful. We have no other choice given the situation that we're in. Those with the broadest shoulders should bear the heavier burden. And that's why we're cracking down on non-doms. Those who made the mess should have to do their bit to clean it up. And that's why we're strengthening the powers of the water regulator and backing tough fines on the water companies that have let sewage flood our rivers, lakes and seas. But just as when I responded to the riots, I'll have to turn to the country and make big asks of you as well. To accept short-term pain for long-term good. The difficult trade-off for the genuine solution. And I know that after all that you have been through, that is a really big ask and really difficult to hear. That is not the position we should be in. It's not the position I want to be in. But we have to end the politics of the easy answer that solves nothing. But I also know that we can get through this together. Because the riots didn't just betray the sickness. They also revealed the cure, found not in the cynical conflict of populism, but in the coming together of a country. The people who got together the morning after, all around the country, with their brooms, their shovels, their trowels, and cleared up their community. They reminded us who we really are. I felt real pride in those people who cleaned up our streets, rebuilt the walls, repaired the damage. And I couldn't help thinking about the obvious parallels. Because imagine the pride we will feel as a nation when, after the hard work of clearing up the mess is done, we have a country that we have built together, built to last, that belongs to every single one of us, and all of us have a stake in it. Our hard work rewarded a dozen times over, because we'll have an economy that works for everyone. An NHS not just back on its feet, but fit for the future. Streets that everyone feels safe in. No longer dependent on foreign dictators, because we're producing our own clean energy right here. And giving every child, wherever they come from, whatever their background, the chance to go as far as their talents will take them. I won't lose sight of that prize. I won't lose sight of what we were elected to do. And most importantly, I won't lose sight of the people that we were elected to do it for. You. This is our country. Let's fix it together. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, I've got a number of questions from the media. I've got Kieran from The Guardian.
Thank you, Kieran. Stacey from The Guardian. Just on that theme, can you tell us why you've cancelled the appointment of your new National Security Advisor? And can you pledge that there will be an open and transparent process to replace that person?
Yes, of course, there'll be an open and transparent process. And no, I'm not going to publicly discuss individual appointments. Thank you.
Berlin today. I would like to take the opportunity to congratulate you once again on becoming Prime Minister. Germany and the United Kingdom are good friends, close partners, and trusted allies. The both of us will be working hard to ensure that this relationship will continue to thrive. Meine Damen und Herren,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm extraordinarily pleased to welcome Prime Minister Keir Starmer so soon after taking office. Germany and the UK share long-standing and a trustful partnership, which is based on shared values and reliable friendship. We are going to foster and promote this cooperation for the benefit of our peoples, for the benefit of Europe and security and the transatlantic sphere. We want to continue to intensify these relations. We don't want to leave it at statements, but base our relations on an entirely new footing. In the coming months, we're going to work towards a treaty which reflects the whole spectrum of our relations. Such a treaty has not existed between Germany and the United Kingdom yet. We also want to deepen a cooperation between our two governments through government-to-government consultations, which we are going to have very soon. Already now, we're coordinating closely in our day-to-day work. We coordinate closely and based on the spirit of trust. All of this goes to show Germany and the UK are special partners indeed. Together, we want to strengthen the European pillar in NATO, and closer cooperation in the field of security will play an important role. We also dealt with the situation in Ukraine today. Germany and the UK stand firmly by Ukraine's side. I explicitly say this also against the backdrop of the fact that attempts were made to sow the seeds of doubt when it comes to this commitment. We will continue to lend financial, economic, political, and military support as long as this is necessary. The budget, the draft budget, has earmarked 4 billion euro in bilateral aid for Ukraine. In addition, together with the G7 states, we provide a 50 billion loan to Ukraine in order to make sure that Ukraine has reliable financial support. And in order to do so, we also use windfall profits from immobilized Russian central bank's assets. We're deeply worried about the situation in the Middle East and the escalation in the region. The immense human suffering, which we're observing for months, is growing just as the risk of a regional conflagration. We call upon all parties involved to continue negotiations immediately, negotiations on a ceasefire and the liberation of hostages. The catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza and the lack of protection for civilians and humanitarian aid workers is something that deeply worries me. Israel needs to do more. We coordinate closely, not only in terms of security policy. It is also important to further develop relations between the European Union and the United Kingdom. I am happy about the announcement by Keir Starmer to seek a reset in the relations to the European Union. We want to take this hand which has reached out to us. The UK has always been an indispensable partner when it comes to solving the big issues affecting all of Europe, and nothing has changed after the UK left the European Union. With the withdrawal agreement, the protocol in Ireland and Northern Ireland, the comprehensive trade and cooperation agreement, and the Windsor framework, we have a reliable legal framework for our relations that needs to be fully implemented. One last point is important to me. The contacts between our societies, between Germans and people in the UK, have declined massively after Brexit and the COVID-19 pandemic. We want to change that because if you know each other well, you understand each other better. We share similar views on this, and this is why we want to intensify the exchanges between Germany and the UK. Mr. Prime Minister, welcome to Berlin.
Thank you very much. Can I first express my sincere condolences for the shocking attack in Solingen last week? Our country knows what it's like to suffer such senseless and despicable acts, and our thoughts are with all the families affected by this terrible event. And Olaf, thank you. It's fantastic to be here with you in Berlin. Not, alas, my first visit here as Prime Minister. Football, as it turns out, decided to visit its second home in Spain this term when I was last here. But anyway, it's still an incredible experience and a showcase for the fantastic hospitality of this great nation. So thank you for hosting yet another episode in English footballing trauma. I've been through a lot. Anyway, I'm delighted to be back at this moment of opportunity for our two countries. Olaf, on every occasion that we've met, we've talked about our ambitions for the future, our values of security, prosperity,
and respect, and our shared determination to harness the power of government for the service of working people. And that is what we are doing today. A new UK-Germany treaty, a once-in-a-generation chance to deliver for working people in Britain and in Germany. A new agreement, a testament to the depth and potential of our relationship, with deeper links on science, technology, development, people, business, culture, a boost to our trading relations. Germany, of course, already the UK's second largest trading partner in the world, and through that, a chance to create jobs here and in the United Kingdom, and deliver that most precious of goods for both our countries, economic growth. Let me be clear, growth is the number one mission of my government, and what we understand clearly is that building relationships with our partners here in Germany and across Europe is vital to achieving it. That is what our agreement today represents, the chance that we have. We will also deepen cooperation on shared social challenges, for example, on illegal immigration, because we cannot smash the smuggler gangs who perpetrate this vile trade without the help of our partners. And I'm really glad that we had substantive discussions today about how we tackle the smuggling gangs and agreed to develop a joint action plan to tackle illegal migration. We will also renew our commitment to the Calais Group, enhance our intelligence sharing on organised immigration crime, but also increase collaboration on tackling climate change, an important goal for the planet, of course, for greater energy security, but also for tackling the drivers of challenges like illegal migration at source. And finally, at the heart of this treaty will be a new defence agreement, an agreement that builds upon our already formidable defence cooperation, but which expands that relationship to face the threats of a volatile world together. That, of course, means a shared resolve to stand up for the security of our people and the wider European continent. And that begins with our unyielding support for Ukraine, and we discuss that in some detail today. Because as Europe's largest contributors to Ukraine's war efforts, and as the nations with the highest defence expenditure among the European countries in NATO, we know only too well the debt we owe to the Ukrainian people, who fight not just to defend themselves, but for the people and all the people across Europe. So today, we affirmed our commitment to stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes. We also share a common commitment to resolve the crisis in the Middle East, as you've just referenced. And we agree on Israel's right to self-defence in compliance with international humanitarian law, the need for de-escalation across the region and for restraint and caution to be exercised, unfettered humanitarian access into Gaza, agreement to a ceasefire and release of all hostages, and the importance of working together towards a political solution based on the creation of a Palestinian state alongside a safe and secure Israel. The only way to provide long-term peace and security for both Israelis and Palestinians. Now that, of course, is not an easy goal, but it is one that we are committed to pursuing together because, as today shows, Britain can advance its interests much more effectively with friends and partners. This treaty is part of a wider reset, grounded in a new spirit of cooperation, with our shared understanding that this will be developed at pace and that we hope to have agreed it by the end of the year. A Britain reconnected, resetting our relationship, rediscovering our common interests, delivering for working people. Britain and Germany already have an incredible relationship, We invest billions in each other's countries. Thousands and thousands of jobs are supported through trade. And every year, millions of people travel between our two countries, exchanging ideas, collaborating, creating, and connecting. But today, we build on that, a bright new future for UK-German relations, two great countries brought closer together than ever before, the strongest strategic partners in Europe and on the world stage. Thank you so much for hosting us here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth Rigby, Sky News. Prime Minister, PM after PM has come to Berlin asking for a better deal, better trade deal, only to fail. You've ruled out rejoining the EU, the single market or customs union, but you know you'll have to make concessions for a better deal. Do you acknowledge that? And specifically, will you allow freedom of movement for young Germans? And Chancellor, our new Prime Minister is talking about a once-in-a-generation reset between UK and Europe. But does Berlin and your partners in Brussels have real appetite for the reset the Prime Minister is pledging? Can the UK really expect to cherry-pick better trade terms outside of the European Union? And is youth mobility something that might materially shift the dial for you? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth. Obviously, today is predominantly about the bilateral treaty that we will agree at pace, and we've talked about the substance of that today. And that will be ambitious. It will be wide-ranging, covering trade, the economy, defence, and many other issues. And the fact that we've agreed the substance, the ambition, and the pace of it today, I think, is very significant for both the UK and for Germany. And that's why I say it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity to take something of that order forward for both of our countries. When it comes to the wider reset with Europe, I'm absolutely clear that we do want a reset. I've been able to repeat that here today, a reset with Europe, a reset with the EU. That does not mean reversing Brexit or re-entering the single market or the customs union, but it does mean a closer relationship on a number of fronts, including the economy, including defence, including exchanges. But we do not have plans for the youth mobility scheme, but we do have plans for a closer relationship between us and the EU as part of that white set. So the position today is exactly as it was before the election, but what we've been able to do today is to move that forward with the bilateral treaty agreement and to reiterate our desire to reset the relationships with the EU. Thank you.
I don't have much to add from my point of view. We want to create good relations between the UK and the European Union. It can become better day by day, and we all share an interest. The historic decision in Germany was taken. Great Britain, the UK, has left the European Union, but we're friends. We live on the same continent, and from our point of view, from our perspective, and we are of the opinion that there is reason to do everything in our power to improve relations between our both countries, but also the UK and the European Union.
Herr Premierminister, Herr Bundeskanzler, Sie haben beide eben die Hilfe für die Ukraine noch mal beteuert. Es gibt aber Zweifel, ob dieses Finanzinstrument von G7 und der EU rechtzeitig für die Ukraine zur Verfügung steht, um Waffen zu kaufen. Deswegen ganz konkret die Frage an Sie beide. Werden diese Windfall Profits aus den frozen Russian Assets noch in diesem Jahr genutzt werden können, um der Ukraine einen Kredit über 50 Milliarden Dollar zu geben? Und wie groß ist eigentlich der Anteil des Kredits, den Großbritannien und auch Deutschland zu steuern? And Prime Minister, second question for you. Germany will deploy American mid-range weapons from 2026 onwards till Germany, France and Britain have developed own capacities in this field. How do you bridge the capability gap in this field, also with American weapons?
Thank you.
I will start. Okay. Es ist so, dass wir uns
beim G7.
Well, in Apulia at the G7, we agreed on lending big support to Ukraine with a loan to the tune of 50 billion euro, with windfall profits of the immobilized Russian central bank's assets. And this is a major effort, but is something that is possible, and we want to swiftly promote this. We're intensively working on technical preconditions. I talked to the president of the European Commission as far as Europe's share, Germany's share is concerned, and how we're going to do it. We have far advanced. We coordinate closely with our American friends so that it fits well within their rules and regulations. And the same holds true for involving all those who want to lend a contribution as part of G7, the UK, Canada, and Japan. And of course, we are happy if others chip in and join. These are the developments. And in this sense, in this regard, we're at work. And we hope that we have the technical preconditions ready for it to happen.
Thank you very much. In terms of the wider question about capability, obviously, the UK, along with Germany, along with key allies, does already provide support and weaponry, particularly in relation to the conflict in Ukraine, which is where we've been working so closely together. So far as the UK is concerned, there's been no change of position, no new decisions made in relation to capability. And the contribution we make is in accordance and consistent with the contribution that was made before the election, because there's been a high degree of consensus, political consensus, in the UK in relation to that. As you would expect, Ukraine was a part of our discussion here this morning as we looked at the challenges ahead. And our resolve is, as ever, to stand shoulder to shoulder with Ukraine to provide the support that it needs for as long as it needs. Thank you. Well, look, I mean, I'm not sure there's much I can add to what the Chancellor already said.
Thank you. Chris McKeon, Press Association. Following on the subject of Ukraine and weapons and long-range weapons, firstly, Prime Minister, is it the case that it is American objections that are preventing the use of Storm Shadow missiles to target, to hit targets in Russia? And what discussions have you had with the Chancellor on lifting restrictions on the use of weapons in Russia? And Chancellor, is now the time to consider lifting restrictions on the use of German-supplied weapons against Russian targets, particularly supplying F-16 jets and Taurus missiles?
Let me just address that. Obviously, and as you know, we have been providing support and weaponry to Ukraine consistent with the approach of other key allies, including Germany. We supported the approach and the framework put forward by the previous government in the United Kingdom when we were in opposition, and we are acting consistently with that in government, and that's why I'm very clear that no new or different decisions have been made. I'm not going to get into tactical questions about the use of weapons for very obvious reasons, but no new decisions have been taken. But Ukraine is, of course, a constant theme of discussion between NATO allies, and we all recognise the need to stand by Ukraine for as long as it takes. And we've renewed that commitment here this morning.
Deutschland is
Germany is one of the very large supporters of Ukraine in Europe. Within Europe, we are the largest contributor. We're going to continue this support, and this support is bolstered and added by the 50 billion loan that we prepared as G7, and we're intensively working on realizing this. As far as weapon supply is concerned, there are no new decisions from Germany.
Vielen Dank, Herr Premierminister.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. The knife-stabbing attacks in Solingen have led to a debate in Germany as to how to limit irregular migration. You just announced that there will be a new action plan between the UK and Germany on this topic. Which tangible measures are contained in this action plan? And Prime Minister, what are the recommendations to the Chancellor based on your own experiences in dealing with knife-stabbing attacks in Solingen? And Mr. Chancellor, the opposition leader Friedrich Merz offered to support laws, draft bills without the support of your coalition partners. This would infringe upon the coalition treaty. Are you categorically against this because of that reason?
Zunächst mal, wir haben uns.
First of all, yes, we intensively exchanged views on the terrible attack of Solingen, and I'm very grateful for the condolences and the solidarity expressed by the Prime Minister in our personal meeting and for reiterating his condolences here. It is terrible, terrible indeed what happened there, and I'm going to continue, and I will not forget meeting those who were there, who are suffering and going through difficult emotions, because it was a terrible situation for the people fighting for their lives. And we know three people have lost their lives in this terrible attack. This terrible murderous attack cost people's lives, and further victims continue to be hospitalized. We mourn the victim, and we wish a speedy and comprehensive recovery to those who have been injured. We can't go back to daily business after this attack. We cannot do that. We will not do that. We will draw the necessary lessons. It is clear we are continuing our efforts to contain irregular migration into Germany. As far as we know, the perpetrator of Solingen was supposed to have left Germany already. He was supposed to be deported to Bulgaria. We are going to closely investigate why this did not happen, why authorities did not deport him. And this needs to change so that such terrible attacks don't happen again. In order to contain irregular migration, the government, in cooperation with the federal states and the Bundesrat and the Bundestag, has passed measures in the past 12 months, a law on deportation, which has removed legal and bureaucratic obstacles that assists authorities in deporting perpetrators. The police now has more authorities to search and look for people who are to be deported, and persons can be detained longer, and asylum seekers receive a reduced amount of support. At the same time, we massively expanded controls and border checks, and we will continue to do so as long as it is possible. All of these decisions show effects. The number of those who come to Germany illegally have reduced, and in comparison to 2021, the number of people deported has increased by 60%. And yet the numbers are not the way the citizens expect them to be and the way I hope them to be. This is why the federal government is going to continue its efforts to contain and limit irregular migration further. We are going to discuss new and coordinate new measures, a tightening of weapons laws, measures against violent Islamism, and further measures in order to make repatriation easier. It is a good signal when the largest opposition party signals its cooperation and the willingness to cooperate, and we welcome this willingness to cooperate with us. The federal government is going to swiftly take the necessary decisions with representatives of the federal states and the CDU-CSU party, and also talk about proposals that are made. The Federal Minister of Interior is going to invite swiftly chairman of the Prime Ministers' Conferences of the Federal States and representatives of the respective ministries for meetings on this matter. The aim of this joint effort is clear. We want to further reduce irregular migration to Germany. At the same time, we all know Germany needs and relies on regular immigration. 20 million of citizens with migrant background lend a contribution to economic prosperity. They're well integrated as neighbors, as classmates. They pay taxes. It's a success story, and we can be proud of this. With modernization, with modernizing the laws on immigration and nationality, the federal government has made a big effort. The state has to contain irregular immigration so as to not to overburden the country. This can and must succeed without questioning our basic law and also international treaties. We owe this to the victims of Solingen.
In relation to the terrible attacks here in Germany, I just reiterate our thoughts are with all of the victims and their families in what is a very difficult set of circumstances. On the wider question of irregular migration and the particular issue that we have in the UK of small boats crossing the Channel, I have long said before the election that I thought the Rwanda scheme was a gimmick, which is why we stood it down immediately. But nonetheless, it is very important that we take back control of our borders. I have long been convinced that the best way, the most effective way to do that is to take down the gangs that are running the vile trade of putting people in dangerous situations across Europe and across the Channel. And I said before the election that I would invest political capital in making sure we could work more effectively with our partners in taking down those gangs. And that's why I'm very pleased today that we've had a substantive discussion, agreed to a joint action plan, and that will, as you would expect, deal with issues like data sharing, intelligence sharing, what we can do on joint operations, because that is the way to take effective action in relation to the vile trade that sits beneath irregular migration across Europe, and in particular sits beneath the vile trade of putting people into small boats across the Channel. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your attention. This concludes our press conference. Thank you.